Hello there, this is Paul Sollentrop of Wichita State University Strategic Communications. Welcome to the Roundhouse Podcast. June is always a good time to talk about Shocker baseball. We have Ryan Jones and Dusty Coleman, two members of the 2007 and 2008 teams that won regionals, both with pretty dramatic moments, and both advanced to the Super Regionals. They're going to take us through those seasons, a lot of memories. We've got Connor Gillespie playing Guitar Hero. We've got road trips. We've got Andy Dirks and his manifesto that helped that 2008 team. We've got the Clint McKeever home run at Oklahoma State. A lot of other good stuff. I will give you a heads up. There's a rough transition kind of in the middle of this where we had some technical difficulties. You'll be able to tell that. It gets back on track pretty quickly. Thanks to Ryan and Dusty for their time, and thanks to you for listening to the Roundhouse Podcast. We have two members of the 2007-2008 Super Regional teams. Dusty Coleman and Ryan Jones are going to join us. I will give you their Shocker credentials, and then we will get rolling. Ryan Jones, an outfielder, went to Bishop Carroll High School in Wichita. He played for the Shockers from 07 to 2010. He hit .281 for his career with 53 steals and 20 home runs. And when I think of Ryan Jones, one of the first things that comes to mind is after all the home games, just the pack of family and friends that waited for him after games by the Shocker dugout. That was always kind of a staple of those games. Dusty Coleman, a shortstop from Sioux Falls, South Dakota. He played in 07 and 08 for the Shockers. He was on the all-regional team in 07. He was a second-team All-Missouri Valley Conference shortstop in 08. He hit .291 for his career with 29 doubles and 10 home runs in those two seasons, and made it to the big leagues in 2015 with the Royals and 2017 with the Padres. Let's start. Give us the update. Dusty, tell the people where you are and what you're doing now.
Well, I'm living in Kansas City, just kind of on the west side of Kansas City in Shawnee with my wife and three kids. Retired from baseball after the 2018 season, and now I am currently a medical sales rep for Arthrex, which is a sports medicine company. So I'm just kind of in a lot of those surgeries that unfortunately I was a part of throughout my career, and just kind of enjoying that part and being here in Kansas City, just kind of with my family, doing the non-baseball life and kind of doing some lessons here and there, kind of keeping my toes in the game and trying to influence some kids while I'm at it. But it's going good. Life is good. No complaints. God is good.
Yeah, and you are one of the many Shocker baseball volleyball marriages that seem to go on.
Yeah, no kidding.
Shocker volleyball fans will remember Sarah Waldorf, libero, mm-hmm. played on the team. Tell us about your family.
So Sarah is a great mom. We have a 5-year-old boy named Noah, a 3-year-old girl named Quinn, and then we had a boy, and right before Christmas this year, his name's Mason. So he's our little big boy, great, great, easy, awesome sleeper baby. And we're just kind of loving life here. And Sarah's kind of my rock, and she's definitely more of the Shocker alumni, sticking around longer than I did. We bleed black and gold here at the Coleman house.
Ryan, give us the update.
Well, I'm currently a teacher at Valley Center Middle School. I teach 8th grade social studies. And then my other job, I actually own a baseball academy in Wichita. It's called 316 Elite. Done very well with the baseball academy. Love teaching the game of baseball on a different side of it. Playing it was great, but I really get a lot of joy out of coaching it now. My wife, Jennifer, she is a nurse at Wesley Rehab Hospital, and she's actually going back to get her master's in nursing. She's about a year out from that, so really excited for her, and she's an amazing woman. Just like Dusty said, we got to brag on our wives because they'll probably listen to this later. I have three children. Unlike Dusty, I am an all-girls dad. My oldest is Bella. She's 5, going to be 6 in September. Paisley, she is three, going to be four in September. And we just had Gentry March 31st, and she is, what, 2.5 months? I'm not good with the weeks thing. I can't shoot up and say, like, you know, how many weeks it is. But she's going to be 3 months soon. Like I said, girl dad. Right now we're living in the in-laws' house because we are currently building a house that we move into in middle of July. So been a fun time, crazy time right now with baseball cooking, but having a blast, and it's unbelievable to think how quickly life's flown by. You know, I felt like just yesterday me and Dusty were in our awesome household and playing baseball together.
Mm-hmm. And I'm glad he's got girls, because now we can we got two options for an arranged marriage and get these families together.
I said, at some point it's going to happen, Paul.
Whether they like it or not.
Yeah, we've already made decisions. It just depends on, you know, the taste, I guess, of my girls to Dusty's boys. I mean, his boys have no choice. So, but at some point we will combine our families, just like, you know, back in the old days.
Shocker marriages, yes. Let's set the stage a little bit. Dusty, how did you end up at Wichita State?
Yeah, so that's kind of an interesting story. Ryan plays a pretty big part of that. We were, my travel team that I grew up playing with in Sioux Falls, went to Topeka and played in an NBC qualifying tournament, high school tournament. And this was our junior year. And we ended up making it to the semifinals. And we played Ryan's Gators Wichita team. And they ended up beating us in the last inning because Ryan hit a walk-off inside the Parker. And after the game, their head coach, Trey Fredrickson, kind of reached out to, you know, my dad and our coaches about me, and told JT and the staff at Wichita about me. And they kind of contacted me, and I came down for it was just like a camp in August, and ended up offering me after that. And I came down, and Jonesy that whole kind of winter after I decided to sign, and he had already signed, kept leaving voicemails on my phone at my house telling me to come down to Wichita and play for the Gators. So after about three of those, I decided I would, and I left. And right after I graduated, came down and played with Jonesy and Harrison, and kind of been in Kansas ever since then.
Ryan, how about you? How did you end up a Shocker?
Well, it was funny. So when I started the recruiting process, you know, I was not going to Wichita State. I wanted to get out of the house. I wanted to get out of, you know, home. I wanted to go live in the dorms. And I had a bunch of different visits and looked at a bunch of different schools, and it really fell down to two, and it was between KU and Wichita State. And I really enjoyed Price. I enjoyed what he did, but I'll tell you what, there's nothing like when Gene Stevenson sat in your house at your kitchen table and talked to your parents for about 3.5 hours. Man, that guy could sell snow to an Eskimo. There's no doubt about it. You know,
me 3 hours. It took like 2 minutes.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm coming.
I think the best thing about Gene is he was extremely honest with you. He told you exactly where he's going to be. You know, he explained that he's never pulled a scholarship, different things like that, that really ingrained me into Wichita State. And, I think, you know, like I said, he was just extremely good at keeping the talent in town, and that's what made Wichita State successful. So, I guess ultimately my decision laid in the opportunity to make it as far as we could in the college tournaments. And, Gene really played that up, and, the rest is history. Came here, decided to play in front of my own family in Wichita, and made the best out of it.
You two show up as freshmen in 2007, and there's a pretty good group of guys coming back from 06. Who set the tone for that team?
I would say Schimmerhorn. He was kind of that leader. It was hard to just pick one. I would say he would be probably my top guy for as the leader, but I mean, you had Blake Curlbutt, a bunch of guys that came back and just kind of set the tone as, you know, how hard we needed to work and what we had to do to get done and to kind of achieve the goals that we wanted to get to. And I feel like their legacy kind of definitely lived on after that, you know, through, you know, the next couple teams. And I don't know, it was, I still even think back of it coming in as a freshman. I just felt like they were so like that. They're only a couple years older than me, but they just felt so much more mature. And I was like, man, I want to be like these guys when I, you know, when I get to where they're at. And, they just kind of really made me want to kind of step up and be a part of the team.
Derek Schermerhorn, infielder, played third and first base. He was a senior on that team. Let me run through a couple more names just to jog people's memories, and then we'll get Ryan's answer. Damon Sublette was a junior on that team. Matt Brown played outfield. He was a junior. And then you had a really good group of pitchers. Aaron Schaefer, Travis Banward, Rob Musgrave. Really strong pitching staff. Kyle Touche was a senior. So you had a good group of people that had been around for 2 or 3 years. Ryan, who set the tempo from your perspective on that team when you arrived?
I mean, I think I'm with Dusty here. The Derek Schermerhorn, you know, he was far and above. He wasn't as much of a vocal team leader, but he was, you know, put you on my back and we'll go together type of team leader. And he was a lot of fun. I would say ultimately a vocal leader that wasn't mentioned was Danny Jackson. Do you remember him, Dust?
Yeah, oh yeah, Danny. That's true. Danny was the kind of the vocal guy for sure.
Yeah, Danny was awesome. I know that pitching staff. What was most impressive to me about Wichita State is Brent Kennett's had a great eye for those pitches that couldn't throw 95 or 96, but they sat about 90, you know, 88 to 90, and they can have movement. And I think everybody on that staff was just put it where they wanted to. We faced adversity the entire time. I mean, in 07, I remember we lost our first game of the regional and then came all the way back to win it, which was
big.
Which was crazy.
Schermerhorn hit. Was big.
I know. I scored on that, baby. It was funny because awesome. I was at second base and it was I'm pretty sure no less than a 20 pitch at bat. Do you remember that? He kept fouling them off. And I was doing my best.
That was New Orleans, right? Or no, that was Arizona.
Arizona. And I was doing my best to score the winning run. So I was getting a great, like trying to get a huge secondary and running hard and busting back and getting picked and everything. And he hits a freaking double. So I jogged in. And when I got into home plate, you know, I was expecting to get swarmed by everybody. No, they were meeting Derek out there. I don't even think I got one high five from anybody. I think that kind of tells you how excited and how happy they were about Derek being able to do it. And, those guys, it was a fun group of guys. But one thing I will say about all of them is, you know, being a freshman, just like Dusty said, you know, we were the low men on the totem pole, but they never treated us like that. I mean, as soon as we showed up, we were just like little brother and they were going to do whatever we could to teach us how to carry on their legacy. And I think that was, the coolest thing for me because, I mean, we hung out with the seniors more than anybody, didn't we, Dust?
Oh, yeah. That was, you know, kind of coming in and you hear the stories of, like, getting hazed and, you know, you really got to pay your dues as a freshman, which I feel like we did a little bit, but it was more like they just took us in and was like, hey, we're going to teach you what you need to know and kind of make you feel as comfortable as possible. And, you know, that was really cool for me, just kind of realizing that they're, you know, they got our backs. They're not, you know, the typical, like, worried about some young freshman coming in, taking their spot. They're like, hey, you're going to be part of this and you're going to be, need to step up your game so we can get to where we want to go. So I definitely, with you, Ryan, I feel like those seniors, you know, really took us in and made us feel like part of the team immediately. And I think that was awesome.
The 2006 team went 2-0 in a regional, beat Houston, beat TCU, and then they lost twice to Oklahoma, so didn't advance. I talked to some guys from the early 90s earlier, and they were on the 91 team, and they had a similar experience. Or the 90 team had a similar experience. They said that failure in 90 really drove that 91 team. It was mentioned a lot. Was your experience similar when you came in 07? Did what had happened in the 06 regional, was that brought up a lot by those guys who came back?
No, I don't think they really brought that up much. I didn't really see how big of a heartbreaking loss it was until we won it in 07 and we were sitting – basically on the couch with Derek Schermerhorn, and you could just see it on his face, like the absolute, like, feeling of relief that he was making it to the next round and the excitement and the pure joy. So I think that was when I noticed that last season really got to them, because I saw it in Derek and Danny Jackson when they were sitting together and just talking, man, we finally did it. We finally pushed through. Like, this is incredible. This is unbelievable. And of course it was me and Dusty's first year. So we're like, shoot, we're going to do it for 4 or 5 years. Come on, boys, let's go, you know? And to realize, like I said, just realize their relief and their excitement afterwards when we were all sitting around and, just having a good time is that this is something special. And you got to cherish every moment of it.
You mentioned that opening loss to New Orleans in the 2007 regional at X Stadium, and boy, talk about a letdown. It had been such a long time since Wichita State had hosted a regional. You get a huge crowd, and New Orleans wins 7-6. How'd that team bounce back from that and win, four in a row?
I think it goes back to the leadership. You know, you had guys like Danny Jackson and Shimmer Horn that didn't push the panic button. You know what I mean? We kind of knew what we had as a squad and what we were capable of. And so, you know, even after that loss, it wasn't like, oh crap, you know, it was just like, all right, it's just another game. You know, we got to keep fighting through it. And I don't ever remember, like, as I think back on that, ever feeling like we weren't going to win. You know, and I think that goes to the culture that those guys and Gene and JT and Brent kind of just developed, you know, that, which was probably part of the taste of the year before of what they went through, that they had been so close that, you know, this time around that experience kind of really took over and they weren't worried and we weren't worried and just had to battle through it.
It was a quiet dugout or a quiet locker room. I'm pretty sure we were home team, so we were on the third base side, right, Doug?
Yeah.
So at least, you know, when you're on the first base side, which is where our home dugout was, when you went in the locker room after the game, you know, you could kind of hide from people because it was just a really long dugout or a long locker room downstairs in our first base dugout. This one was the squared locker room. So literally you saw everybody's face and you couldn't really hide from anybody. So, I mean, Gene had his way of motivating and putting fire into it, but honestly, Gene wasn't that concerned this time, I don't think. And that's what shocked me. He didn't seem very concerned. He just said, well, here we go. We've got a long way to go now. Like basically saying, hey, you know, now you just made your trip much longer, but he knew ultimately where that team could go. And I think that, you know, once we got to Arizona, I mean, it was pretty much destined that we were going to make it just because, I mean, you could always feel momentum in baseball. And we found that momentum right around the game going into Arizona. And once we found that momentum and then after Derek Shimmerhorn hit the double, I mean, we might as well not have played the second game because, I mean, those guys were on fire and it was fun to watch.
Yeah, you mentioned Shimmerhorn's double, which will certainly be one of the more memorable moments in Shocker baseball history, certainly in the last 20 years or so. Let me reset that. It was tied 3-3 at X Stadium. This was an elimination game for the Shockers because they had lost to New Orleans, and then they came back and beat Oral Roberts, eliminated New Orleans, and then faced the Wildcats 3-3, two outs, I believe, and Shimmerhorn doubles with Ryan Jones, who was your pinch runner, I think. Ryan Jones.
Yeah, I think it was for Tyler Weber, maybe, or somebody along those lines. I forget who it was, but yeah, it was definitely
an Tyler Weber.
I was gonna say I'm not one to brag, but it was definitely an upgrade of speed on the base pass.
Ryan, you took us through that scene. Dusty, what do you remember about Shimmerhorn's double and the celebration it set off?
I just remember it being, you know, just this low line drive that you were like, wasn't sure if it was going to get over that guy's head, and it just kept carrying. And the guy made like he didn't go back right away, and it was just like he just kept rising and right over his head. And I just remember all of us just like jumping, like, let's go, here we go. And just like a fun moment, you know, right when it cleared to pass his glove, we knew we had it, and it was celebration from then on.
Let me recreate that ninth. Brett Baskew, pinch hitter, walk.
Oh, the, Yeah, there it was. Yeah.
So you ran for Baskew, according to this.
Hey, and that's, you know, once again, that's an upgrade of speed. I love Brett. But I could definitely beat him in a foot race. There's no doubt about that back in the day.
And then Dusty.
He's going to watch this, and I'm going to get an email.
Yeah. Dusty fouled off a bunt for strike two, but then got one. Ryan Jones.
Hold on a second. Because he ends up bunting it, though. Right?
Right.
This is what happened. And Dusty, you'll remember, we called Steele. Do you remember that?
No. I wish I did, but no.
We called because there was a left-handed pitcher up. So we called Steele on first move, and I stole, and I had that bag stolen. And you laid down the bunt. And, like, everybody was freaking out because I was stealing. So if you would have popped that bunt in the air, it would have been game over.
Been game over, yeah.
I remember that. Because remember,
you're facing Daniel Schlereth, interesting part of that game. Schlereth gets Andy Dirks out on a soft liner to shortstop, and then Derek Schermerhorn comes up and goes 2-2, fouls off two pitches, and hits it for a double. Okay, that brings up the first super regional in at Wichita State against Cal Irvine. I think what people will remember from that would be the crowds. What was it like in that atmosphere? People were just starved for this kind of stage for Shocker baseball.
Go ahead, Ryan.
Well, I think the coolest thing is just driving up to the field. Like, we were driving up to the field just to go and you know, get ready for the game, like, when we actually showed up. So when we showed up, the line was literally all the way down, 21st Street past Coke Arena and, like, kind of going into that Sonic area. That's how long the line was for people to get tickets to get in. And then when we started, like, when we walked out for warmups before our batting practice, because we were the home team, so we walked out for warmups, and all of a sudden you saw the outfield gates open, and it was literally like, go stake your claim. Like,
yeah,
people
it was like
running.
A gold rush to find your spot.
Yeah, they were running with like four chairs on their backs, just dead sprint, and then they would just lay it down and like make sure nobody got in their spot. And I remember, like, leading up to it, there's a lot of news coverage, and we didn't realize it until, like I said, we started warmups and saw the wave of people that came in. And it was one of the first times that I can honestly say that I did batting practice in front of 9,000 fans.
Yeah, they had to bring in extra bleachers. Quite the scene for those two games. Definitely.
And I think the other teams remembered it too, because I ended up playing with or against a decent amount of guys from that Irvine squad, like just in the Cape or, in pro ball. And they all remembered, like, man, when we got to Wichita, those fans were on us from the get go. Like, that was like one of the most intense atmospheres they'd ever played in before. So it was, it was an experience for sure. And we remembered it, and so did the other teams.
Yeah, no doubt. So Cal Irvine beats Wichita State two of those games to advance, 1-0 and 3-2. Shockers, so that was Wichita State's first time out of a regional since 96. What did it mean to you guys, to the guys on that team, as far as your kind of legacy, getting out of the regional, bringing that super regional to X Stadium?
I think the older guys on that, 07 or 06 to 07 team, they really taught us to expect nothing less. We show up and ultimately they knew their goal, and anything less was kind of a failure. And so that kind of fueled us into the next season. I mean, as soon as those guys left us and we came out the next year and we were ready to go. We knew exactly what our goal was and how to reach it. So I would say, at least with them, it was just raising the bar and showing us how to get there, showing us that, even though you might get down early, to never give up. And I really think that was the mantra with that 06 team, because there was a few stretches in there where we lost quite a few games. And I do remember this, Dust. It was the Missouri Valley Conference Tournament. I think we lost the first game to Detweiler. in the conference tournament. So we lost that game, and then we made it all the way back and made it to the championship game. So it wasn't the first time that we've lost early and then had to, you know, scratch and claw our way back. And I know with the super regional game, the Anteaters, they had two stud pitchers. And all we could think of was, let's just get to their bullpen. Let's get to the third game. And we were extremely close to that. So, those two pitchers, I think threw like 140 or 130 pitches. I mean, it was something crazy.
It was definitely two pitching dual games. I mean, with, was it Van Wert and then Musgrave?
I think so. I don't know. That's
two guys that we threw.
That's a Paul question right there.
I'm not sure on that.
I think it was. I think they, I mean, it was both good games. And I think it was game one, too. I remember it was so close, and I don't remember who hit it, but we had guys on the bases and a ball in the gap, and they had,
their
center fielder was like Ali, and they had two guys, and they dove, like the left fielder dove in front. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, that center fielder behind that other left fielder diving ended up making a great grab, like towards the end of the game. And that kind of, I think we would have wanted if that guy's passed for sure. We scored two, and you know, we win the game. But he made a great play. And I feel like they just kept doing that. They, I think we hit the ball decent, but they just kept making plays, and it was, you know, just baseball.
Yeah, I remember that. That was game two, and I actually got a pinch hit appearance. And it was pretty funny because I went back and watched the film, and I think I hit .150 my freshman year. Something that you can count on basically one hand or two hands to see how many hits.
Yeah, that was great pitching and defense from that Irvine team. Connor Gillespie, obviously a towering figure.
Look at this great pinch hitter that's batting .150. And I actually got a hit up the middle, and then, like you said, Dust, you know, Dirks comes in, and I think it was Dirks, and he hit that ball in the gap, and the guys dove on it. So,
yeah,
pretty crazy.
Favorite Connor Gillespie story. Connor, third baseman on those teams, obviously just a towering figure in that era. Give us your favorite Connor memory.
Well, for me, I mean, so I was playing short. I had Connor Gillespie at third base and Damon Sublette at second base. So are two very introverted people. So my freshman year, I feel like, I mean, those guys didn't speak unless they were spoken to usually. So it was a very quiet infield, but just the confidence that those two guys had without even having to say a word was pretty crazy. I mean, Connor's one of the most hardworking guys ever. Dry humor. When he did say something, it was hilarious. But just the amount of swings that guy would take just to perfect his craft was pretty crazy. And you can really tell when he came back after that season, after going to the tape and just dominating, that you knew, like, hey, well, this guy knows what's up, and he's going to be a great player. I mean, he already was, but it was like he took his game to the next level that next year.
I'll tell you what, that would be a fun mound visit every time. Connor and Sublette. I don't think they said three words to each other either.
Yeah, they were just so quiet on the field.
So it was, I mean, we got to see a different side of Connor, me and Dusty. The first thing that pops into my mind was his ride and dirty, you know, walk-up song that he played for all 3 years that he was in college. You know what I'm talking about, Dust?
Yeah, just like out of character. Like,
that's not, yeah, it's completely opposite of what Connor was.
I feel
like
somebody picked that for him and he just didn't care enough to switch it.
Yeah.
Like, and whatever, I'll get a hit no matter what my walk-out song is.
I was lucky enough to be sandwiched in between Dirk and Connor my sophomore year. And just every time I was on first base, I knew my legs had to be stretched because that dude was going to see the double. I mean, he was a double machine. But I guess my Connor stories, we actually got to see the different side of Connor, me and Dusty, when you could see it. We had an apartment together, me and Dusty and a kid named Kyle Sisney. We all had an apartment together. And Connor would just show up randomly. And back then we had Rock Band, which was a big video game back in the day where you kind of had your own band. And Connor would show up, he would grab the guitar, he would force me and Dusty to sing, More times than not. Yeah, we're terrible. More times than not. Of course, we were freshmen, right? So you just kind of listen to what they said. So they made us sing. The other played bass. And then usually Andy Dirt.
Dirt's always there too.
He played the drums, if you'd remember that. So you want to talk about an awesome rock band. But that was about the only time. So Connor would show up, grab the guitar, tell us what we're doing, play for like 4 hours, and then stand up. It was just like Forrest Gump when he stopped running and just walked home. Like we just would all say, right. All right, see you later. And he would just walk out the door.
What kind of music did Connor Gillespie favor?
Honestly, I have no clue. I think a little bit of everything. You know, I don't know. I don't even know. That guy would sit in silence, to be honest with you, Paul. I think silence, maybe. Like, he wasn't a guy that would have music on when he hit, or at least maybe he would put in headphones, if anything, but I don't remember much music.
He was, I feel like throughout that whole season, though, just like from freshman year, or our freshman year, so his sophomore year to his junior year, he did open up a lot. Like, towards the end of that season, that next year, you know, you could see, like, just the emotion that he had, like, playing well and some of the big games and big moments, like showing some emotion that you didn't see that like the year before. It would have been like he could have hit a walk-off home run and just been like no nothing. And then after that, he was, you know, kind of into it. So it definitely became more fun as we kind of grew together as like a team and a family.
Yeah, that Valley Championship in 08, I think it was 08, right?
Yeah.
Where he hit those couple home runs. And because I was on first base, I think, when he did hit a bomb. And then he came home and I, like, you know, I was expecting the normal Connor fist bump, and like that guy screamed and then punched me as hard as he could right in the middle of the chest. And I think I lost my breath from it. And I was like, who is this guy?
Yeah. It's kind of a flash to like when he hit the home run in the World Series too. Like,
let's see, my favorite Dusty story. You know, you can't talk about a Dusty Coleman story without bringing in his father. Since you're going to bring up my nose, I'm going to bring up your dad. The best Dusty Coleman story is when we were in Burke Burnett, Texas, and we look over and we see your dad with his shirt off, baking like a lobster. You remember that?
That was
every
game. If the sun's out, the guns are out with the old DC.
We took over your interview there,
yeah,
Paul.
Oh, you're doing great. You're doing great. I was going to ask.
I actually got fined in pro ball for my dad taking off his shirt. My manager in the minor league said, hey, if your dad comes to the game again and takes his shirt off, I'm fining you $20. So needless to say, I ended up having to pay my manager like $40 for the weekend.
So it lived on. That's awesome.
Go ahead, Paul. We mentioned Andy Dirks earlier, and one of the things that stood out about those 07 and 08 teams was the outfield defense, just a tremendous amount of speed and fundamentals out there. Kevin Hall, Andy Dirks, Ryan, Kenny Williams. Ryan, tell us about playing defense with that group in those years.
I mean, it was easy. You know, what I think is great about outfielders is you can tell, you know, when you're very comfortable with each other, you set plays and you're not afraid to go after baseball. I know I played right field quite a bit during that time. So I would be more or less, depending on the pitcher, I would like to hug the line. So all the foul balls I would go and get after. And I knew that, you know, Dirks, who was in center, usually had my backside gap. I think, you know, ultimately knowing that every ball that was put in the air, somebody was going to get after it. And if they hit a double, they were lucky because it didn't happen a lot. So I think that was one of the funnest outfields that I've had. You know, and like I said, you only had to worry about one gap because everybody else had your backside gap, and it made it easier for sure.
I think that was what was fun about our whole team is like, we didn't have a single soft, weak spot defensively. I mean, you had Workman, who's a speed demon at second base. He could cover ground and get any ball over there. Me and Connor, I feel like we locked down the left side pretty well. Weber had a great season behind the plate. I think had like, I don't know, one error or something like that.
He was a gold glove.
At first base, you could pick anything. I feel like we were pretty consistent on making the plays. And then, I mean, our pitching staff, almost every guy was drafted, I feel like, you know, so I feel like we had a perfect storm of a team, you know. They built our squad pretty well. Got to give credit to Gene and JT and Brent and, you know, what they developed.
So 2008, lose kind of a epic Valley tournament, or no, 08 was when you beat Missouri State. The Connor Gillespie just dominated. Andy Dirks had a great Valley tournament. Go to Oklahoma State for the regional. What was the mood heading to Stillwater?
I feel like it was just excitement. I mean, we had been in that position before, you know, bringing back a lot of guys that, you know, played a lot the year before. So I feel like we had a bunch of confidence going into it. And Oklahoma State's a fun atmosphere to go play at, too. Man, that last game with McKeever hitting that grand slam and, you know, just the way it all worked out was pretty fun. And it was fun also too, to like being able to host the year before, but then going to another place was kind of fun too, you know, getting to see how it worked as being like a traveling squad and getting to go somewhere else new was a lot of fun too. At least for me, I always liked traveling and you know, going to new parks.
Yeah. We mentioned the Derek Schermerhorn double, the Clint McKeever grand slam, to beat Oklahoma State in 08.
Right off the foul pole, right?
Yeah, right off the foul pole. Yeah. Jim Thomas swears it hit the orange OSU star on the foul pole. I don't know if we can be sure about that, but that was JT's story. Where were you when Clint McKeever hit that grand slam?
I was in the dugout, I think, for sure.
Yeah, I got a good story.
Right before that, maybe.
No, I've got a great story for that. I don't think you were on deck, maybe, Dust. You might have been on deck.
Yeah, maybe. I'm not. I can't remember. I know.
Or did he pinch hit for you?
No, I don't think so.
I don't know.
I just remember the home run and celebrating after that.
So I give this story, Paul, and I'm not lying to you. I give this story to my kids that I coach every year. I think they're probably sick and tired of talking about it, but it's kind of baseball and picking up your teammates. So I remember that somehow I think I had a runner on third base with one out, and I was up to bat, and that was the two hole. So we had one out, runner on third base. We're tie game. So all I have to do is put a ball in the outfield, you know, anything that gets deep enough to where that run can score. And we're all kind of celebrating and going off with a one run lead. So I get up to bat. I kind of battle through it. I know it gets to two strikes pretty quick. So I'm battling. And then I get a jam shot right to the shortstop in the air. I mean, I don't even think it
got above the Jordy Mercer, right?
Yeah. I mean, it was a crappy swing. And I was so mad at myself. So ran into the dugout. You know, said the things to get my mind right, which I probably can't say on this podcast. But as soon as I did that, though, I jumped right back in, you know, and I was the first guy right on the where the dugout ends, going up to bat. So, I mean, I was the first guy there as soon as the next at bats happened. And then Connor gets up. They intentionally walk Connor. And then I believe the next guy walked, or maybe it was second and third. I forget. But it loaded the bases for Clint McKeever. And when that ball boinged off the foul pole, I'm pretty sure, I ran around the bases with Clint. I don't know. My life kind of left from my own
blacked
body.
Out. I don't know what happened.
I blacked out. Because I mean, I was the guy that basically, you know, you thought you ruined the game, and then all of a sudden your teammate has your back like that. And I'm pretty sure, like, I jumped into his big bear hug arms, because if you guys know Clint McKeever, he is probably one of the biggest human beings I've ever seen in my life. So I jump in his arms, and now it's so funny, because you go into any Applebee's around Wichita and you see my picture of me, like, literally hugging, and I'm like, yeah, that's a picture of relief, because he just saved my butt. It's funny, the little stories you get, but I told the kids, you know, you always got to rely on your teammates to pick you up in the long run. And I know Clint did that. And as soon as that happened, it was, it was so funny because, I mean, you could tell it was a half and half stadium. And you could tell Wichita State fans where they were at. You could tell where Oklahoma State fans were at. And it was just crazy. You felt like you went deaf in one ear and the other ear was just louder than loud can be. So it was incredible. It's hard to explain, but,
I mean, we got to give props to Clint too, cause he came in and I believe in that game and threw like two or three scoreless innings for us too. And then hit a walk-off.
Yeah.
Not a walk-off, but the grand slam. It was walk-off, wasn't it?
No, it was, we were top of nine. Yeah, because Logan Hope came in afterwards and just shut the door.
And shut it down, okay.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you if you remembered who got the final three outs. That's a good shocker trivia question. Nice. It was indeed
Logan Hope. I got it, baby. It was Logan Hope, and I remember it because I remember watching the film of it afterwards, and Logan Hope was – he wasn't a big guy. You know, he might have been tall, but he wasn't very – he didn't have a lot of meat onto him. And he was literally on the bottom of our dog pile. And you could tell after the dog pile to clear, and he just laid there and he kind of just sat up. I was like, man, I can only imagine what was in your face while you're in the dog pile. But
yeah, let me take through that game. What a performance by Clint McKeever. He tied the game at 7. In the ninth, they walked Connor, and McKeever hit a single up the middle to tie the score at 7-all. Then we get to the 10th, still tied. Tyler Hill walks. Kenny Williams walks. And then with two outs, they again walked Connor Gillespie to get to McKeever.
Yep. So that's what happened, I think, is – yeah, because Dirks bunted him over. And then I came up with runners on second and third with one out. And I flew out to, like, shortstop. And then Connor walks automatically. Like, they intentionally walk him and then McKeever with the bomb. Cool. Huh. Crazy. That's nuts.
Yeah. Quite a moment. Sent the Shockers off to Tallahassee. Was Tallahassee the hottest place on earth?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. That was brutal. But don't you remember after game one, after we won, like both sides were just like all like went over to the football stadium to the training room and were just like hooked up to IVs.
Yep.
I remember Clint McKeever, who's a huge human. You know, was sweating like crazy, and he was like full body cramping after that game.
And yeah, and you
same thing. Like my calves and my hamstrings were for the next hour after the game were cramping up.
And you remember? So you remember we took BP on the field there, and they didn't, and we're trying to fit because they took it inside. And we're trying to figure out why. Like, what the heck? Because I mean, Buster Posey was a stud back then, and we wanted to watch Buster Posey hit BP, but they did not. Take BP outside, and we quickly realized after sweating through BP and being exhausted for the game why we didn't take batting practice outside. So that was kind of fun. Tallahassee, I think it was like 98 with 90% humidity. It was the humidity that felt like that made it the worst because it was just like almost having to swim through the freaking air. You know how awesome that was.
You remember like Dan Cahill, our trainer, had – like V8 tomato juice, like that's what we were drinking in the dugout. Like it was to the point where we needed anything with like salt and electrolytes. We were drinking V8 as it was 95 and just all humid.
As soon as we got into the dugout, you would have a line of 9 dudes sitting down with their heads between their knees and Dan Cahill coming through with the ice towel every time.
Yeah.
Just rubbing us down with ice towel. I remember our first game, we wore freaking black too. It was just, it was ignorant. That was Rob Musgraves, dude. You remember him? Yeah. He always wore the black jerseys. He wouldn't wear anything else. That game. Yeah, he was incredible. I loved watching Rob pitch.
And ESPN did us no favors with, I think they were like noon, 2 and 2 starts. So you were right in the heat of the day. Tallahassee Super Regional, Florida State. Shockers win the first game 10-7. I remember Anthony Capra finishing that one out. And then Florida State came back and won the next two, 14-4, 11-4. I have heard through the years a story about Buster Posey throwing out Ryan Jones at second base. Is this true or was this, do you remember that?
I don't know about that. I wouldn't claim that. I don't remember throwing that out. I do have a great Buster Posey story though. So in the first game, I slid in hard to the shortstop. I think his last name was like Delmonico or something.
Yeah, Tony Delmonico.
And I crushed that kid. And the second baseman throw brought him up the line. And I mean, I'm sliding in hard, Paul.
You were clean, though.
It was a clean slide. You know, and I felt bad for him, but I got up and I went to kind of see how he was doing. And he was writhing in pain, but you know, kudos to that kid. I think he played the rest of the game on like a broken ankle. But the next game, game two, after he'd won, I got booed by everybody for every at bat that I was there. I mean, I'm talking about booed. Everybody in that area hated me. And my first at bat, I got up there, got booed, and I believe I hit a single up the middle. My next at bat, I got booed, and I hit another single up the middle against this lefty. And I got up for my third at bat, and Buster Posey told me, man, they don't like you out here. I was like, well, when you take up the shortstop, he's like, well, they need to shut up because you're 2-for-2 and we're tired of you coming up the bat. And I just kind of laughed. I was like, dude, this is Buster freaking Posey telling me that. I was like, dude, Buster, I hate every time you have to come up the bat because I have to take about 10 steps backwards, knowing that the ball could leave the yard at any time. So that was pretty good. And he was a very personable guy. But, man, it was scary when he got up to bat.
Yeah, I'd forgotten.
He kind of dominated that series, too. I don't know. You probably know how many RBIs and everything. I feel like every time he came up, he had guys on the base pass, and he got some in every single time. It was kind of annoying. I think they had, like a Wheels on the Bus Go Round, kind of a Buster Posey song. And I remember by the end of game three, when we were kind of, you know, losing, that subconsciously my brain was like singing that dang song in my head. No, get out of here.
Yeah, obviously an awesome player. I'd forgotten that, Ryan. You were the villain there for that series.
They hated me.
One guy I want to talk about, we've mentioned him several times, but Andy Dirks, he seemed to be a real leader on those 07 and 08 teams. I have this distinct memory of what I call the Andy Dirks manifesto, where he wrote down a bunch of rules and guidelines, you know, don't be an idiot on the base paths and things like that. It didn't stick out in your guys' memories as much as it did mine. But tell us about Andy. What made him such a special part of those teams?
Well, I remember. So now that you talk about it, I do remember that. And I believe he wrote that shortly after we got swept on like a 9-hour trip. Or we got swept or we lost one late. And he wrote all the guidelines and the things to do. And remember, he printed them off and handed it out to everybody. And it was kind of funny because Dirks never seemed like the guy that was like very scholarly, I guess, to say the least. But you know, when he put pen to paper and when his mind starts flowing and you actually take the time to listen to him, I mean, he said a lot of great things, and I'm shocked that, you know, ultimately he didn't become a manager of the big leagues or something, because he could have easily done that. I think the greatest thing about like Andy Dirks and just the way that he played, I mean, he was your prototypical dirtbag. His goal, he knew his role. His role was to get on base, let me either hit a ball in between first or second or bunt him over, and then Connor Gillespie would get up and hit. I mean, he knew his role, and he had some kind of crazy, 58 or 60-game streak that was going on, and that was the last thing from his mind. He just went – I mean, I think he had, 20 hit-by-pitches that year. I mean, he did whatever it took to get on base. And that was probably, you know, a big disappointment for me in the 08 season. You know, is that he didn't win the MVP, because he was the MVP. I mean, Connor Gillespie by far was probably the best player in the league, but I think Dirks, from a value standpoint, there was nobody like him. There was nobody better than him. And his leadership, his excitement, never take a day off type of thing. It was pretty cool. And it was even better to see him and JT kind of talk to each other, because, I mean, heck, JT was an infield coach, but I mean, they acted like they were brothers. It was kind of funny on that side of things. So, Dirks is just a good country boy that, you know, always be a great friend of mine.
Mm-hmm. I just remember him just like unlimited energy. Like he would, like we talked about earlier, he'd come over to our house and play video games, and I would be like, man, I'm ready to go to bed. And he could just keep staying up and then wake up the next morning at 5 for our workouts and be all about it and not tired at all. Just like every time he got out there, he just played balls to the walls. And he was just fun to watch in that manner. You know, he was never going to not give it his all once he crossed those lines.
Favorite Missouri Valley Conference road trip?
Dusty?
I don't know if I can pinpoint a favorite one. I always like going to Springfield. I always like going to Missouri State. I feel like that kind of atmosphere around that nice ballpark and then kind of at that hotel was always fun because they kind of had that community area in the center of the hotel, so we would always get together and play cards. And you know, that's the part I miss most about baseball at this point in my life is I miss the games and I miss playing and all that, but I miss my boys, you know, and playing cards and hanging out and being able to see your best friends while you're working. You know, that's the fun part. I miss the road trips, being able to play cards and watch movies and hang out.
I can't do it. Who was the biggest rival during those days?
You guys hear me now?
Yeah.
I would say Creighton and Missouri State were our two rivals.
All right.
Creighton for sure, I think would be our biggest rival. They were always pesky and didn't give up, and we always had a battle every single time.
Ryan, biggest rival, Ryan? That's what we were talking about.
Oh, biggest rival. Do you want me to say my road trip first?
Oh yeah, if you got a road trip, pitch in.
You know, the road trip actually that I remember the most was in like 09, I think, or 010, or in 10. We had, I think it was Illinois State. They had the Inland Hurricane. Do you remember that, Paul?
Southern Illinois.
Southern Illinois. That's what it was. Southern Illinois. We had the Inland Hurricane and all of our lights were out in the hotel. And, I remember we were all running around. We knew we weren't playing the game next day, but they tried to give us a curfew to get in our rooms and we didn't care. And we were all running around and JT was running around with a little candle, like trying to catch people, to see their faces and stuff. And one of my best buddies, Mitch Caster at the time, you know, he was running around and we were all just kind of running around playing hide and go seek with JT. And he got caught and he was like, hey, get over here. And like, he took the candle and put it up to Mitch's face and Mitch blew the candle out and ran away. It was awesome.
Oh, Mitch, that was I remember you guys telling me that story.
Oh, it was awesome. But
I had forgotten about that. I'm looking at the
long trips.
That would have been 09, I think, because you did not go to Illinois that year. And I remember that area was just devastated, and they kept saying, we're going to play. And you were just thinking, the baseball game is the last thing the people of Carbondale need to be worried about right now. And then finally they
ended up. The outfield fence was blown down. It just made me chuckle, you know. But,
yeah.
I mean, I'm with Dusty. I think Omaha in 08 was awesome because we got to play at Rosenblatt right before it was blown up. That was great. And plus we played in that snow game on Friday, if you remember that.
Yeah, with the big, huge snowflakes that you can't even see the ball coming in.
I have no idea.
Just playing through it.
Yeah, because I remember I hit a double and I was jogging to third base because I thought it was a home run. And all of a sudden the ball comes flying in from out of nowhere. And it was televised too, if you remember that. So that was a lot of fun. Omaha was always good. And having that Creighton rivalry was great. And what was your second one, Paul?
I think we talked about the biggest rivals. Did you have a Valley road trip that you just dreaded?
I freaking hated Northern Iowa with a passion.
Yeah, same here.
That was awful.
Because the hotel was like, I feel like it was like 20, 30 minutes away from the field too. So,
And the field, do you remember?
It was always raining there too. Like
always raining, and it always seemed in the locker room was god awful. Yeah. I mean, let's be honest. There's a reason why that place basically got renovated.
Was that the one? Was that the place where it was like short too? Like it was literally like a 7 foot little, or like a 5.5 foot tunnel back into the clubhouse too. And you could like smoke your head if you didn't duck.
Yes, that was it. That was it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I expected you to say Northern Iowa. I remember, I remember that park. It was not good, that's for sure.
Thank you for listening to the Roundhouse Podcast, courtesy of Wichita State University Strategic Communications. We appreciate your time. We encourage you to rate, review, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, such as on iTunes or Google Play. You can find more Roundhouse content at GoShockers.com. Thank you for listening.